The following Dharma talk was given by Danika Shoang Ankele Osho at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shoang Osho is a Dharma holder and priest in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered freely. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. Good afternoon, really. Good afternoon. All right. So, what is the work of this moment? We could say it's to look deeply underneath the appearance of things. We could say that what we find comes in glimmers that clarify over time. We could say that our experience, our understanding of the Dharma, happens gradually by virtue of training. We say that the great matter is beyond words, that it's outside the scriptures, and yet it does get talked about in various ways. We have to hush the baby's cry. So we might say the way is perfect, like vast space. We might say the entire phenomenal world is the magical display of the deity. We might speak of Tathagata, the realm of reality, the Dharma body, Nirvana, the deathless, the unborn, mind, the world, Vairochana, Buddha. Master Keizan in Zazen Yojinki, an essay on the practice of Zazen, wrote, "What is this? Its name is unknown. It cannot be called body. It cannot be called mind. Trying to think of it, the thought vanishes. Trying to speak of it, words die. It is like a fool, an idiot. It is as high as a mountain, deep as the ocean, without peak or depths. Its brilliance is unthinkable. It shows itself silently between sky and earth. Only this whole body is seen." Dogen said to take up a leaf and transform it into the 16-foot golden body of the Buddha, to take up the 16-foot golden body of the Buddha and turn it into a lettuce leaf. I have explored now and again a little bit, just a little bit, of Vajrayana meditation practice. And one thing that I've only explored the tiniest bit is this notion of deity practice, where you work with and cultivate an image of the deity and relate to that within your meditation and bring that deity into your own being, becoming that deity. And I've explored it not as a Vajrayana practitioner would, but as a student of mind and meditation might. And I think it's very interesting from that perspective that there's an approach of starting with the deity and bringing it in, and then seeing the entire phenomenal world is the display of the deity. And then the Zen approach, which is to start with the phenomenal world, with the lettuce leaf, with the shovel full of gravel, with the shit stick, and to go in that route and to discover the entire phenomenal world is no other than the world-honored one. And by entire phenomenal world, don't mistake who I'm talking about. In the Pabhasara Sutta, Buddha said, "Luminous, monks, is the mind, and it is defiled by incoming defilements. The uninstructed, run-of-the-mill person doesn't discern that as it actually is present, which is why I tell you that for the uninstructed, run-of-the-mill person, there is no development of the mind. Luminous, monks, is the mind, and it is freed from incoming defilements. The well-instructed disciple of the noble ones discerns that as it actually is present, which is why I tell you that for the well-instructed disciple of the noble ones, there is development of the mind." The well-instructed disciples of the noble ones. How did we get to be so lucky? I don't know. For the well-instructed disciples of the noble ones, there is development of the mind. And as a friend of mine in the Dharma has said on several occasions, we go in the direction we're pointed. So beyond words and letters, outside the scriptures, and yet there is pointing. And we do turn ourselves and head. This development of mind, we speak about the threefold training of sila, samadhi, and prajna, so commonly thought of as morality, sila, samadhi as meditative concentration, prajna as wisdom. And the Buddha's Eightfold Path can be looked at through this lens of the threefold training. So with the sila, the moral conduct, you have right speech, right action, right livelihood. With samadhi, or concentration, that's right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. And then prajna, or wisdom, is right view, and also right intention, or right resolve. And what I wanted to do is look at the threefold training as some energetic pointers that might be beneficial for us as we continue to deepen into session. More like a flavor or an energy or attitude we could cultivate or call forward, or if we're getting lost or, I don't know, stuck, we might find use for. Sila. I was thinking about what is the energy of sila? The teaching on purification of the mind, ceasing from harm, practicing good, actualizing good for others, the three pure precepts that sort of hold the whole thing, And I thought, you know, sincerity. Sincerity. Caring. The energy of caring. The Latin root of the word sincerity means clean and pure. I was so pleased to look that up and find that. Caring. Sincerity. I feel like sincerity and commitment are like two of the like beautiful human qualities on which the monastery is built, on which it runs. It's like you kind of have to have sincerity to train. Everybody's sincerity can look different. It doesn't have to show up in a particular way. But I'm guessing that for each of us, it's present. Caring about practice, caring about our life, caring about the great matter, the world, living beings. It's the quality in our own heart that wants to know, wants to understand. I remember once years ago in an open sozan, Shoka was the head server, for those of you who know Shoka. And he spoke about how he felt like so grateful to have the opportunity to be head server, and that like a position like that, and I think he was speaking very personally, but in a sense also more broadly, gives you permission to care. And that really struck me. It stayed with me all these years. Because sometimes in our culture, it seems like, I don't know, the encouragement is to like not really give a shit. But isn't caring incredible? Caring about how you do a thing, or caring about a person, caring about a sangha or a monastery. That's sincerity. That sincerity is one way that we can respond to the wounds of the world. Isn't it? Like we can let the wounds of the world, the wounds the world brings to us, or the wounds that we witness in the world. Of course, ultimately, where can you draw the line? We can let them harden. We can let them encourage a strong sort of defense. Or we can let them help us care. It's more painful to care. Maybe not, though, right? It seems that way, but there's something else there. The possibility of joy, the reality of love. What else do you want in your life than love? Aren't you willing to hurt some for the sake of love? In the precepts retreat that I had the honor and pleasure of co-leading with Shugen Roshi a couple weeks ago, we were talking about like when do you know if you're aligned with good? Or like when do you know that when your moral alignment is true? Which is a great question to consider. And people had some thoughtful responses, and a common theme that emerged was like, it's a feeling. It's a feeling. It's kind of one of those things that like we can put some words there and we can put some labels there, but what we're talking about is like a heart feeling. We know when we've done something harmful. God, don't you just feel it when you've hurt somebody and you know? We can feel it when we atone, when we repair, when harmony is restored. Isn't this interesting that it's a feeling? Does that make you wonder? The livingness of things. We feel it, the livingness of things, the living world, the live world, the phenomenal world as the 16-foot golden body of the Buddha. I've told this story before, but it's a good one, and I know there's some newer folks, so I'm gonna tell it again. Many years ago, when I was in my first year of residency and I was in the kitchen, I was the cook with Emmy Stanley, for you old timers who remember Emmy. We were in the kitchen and one summer afternoon, one of the residents who was having a rough time and who had a volatile character, just generally speaking, was really upset about something, I don't know what. And he like stormed into the kitchen and like was, you know, speaking loudly, sort of yelling around, and he like opened the refrigerator door and slammed it, and then he like kicked the refrigerator, and then he like stormed out of the kitchen. And you know, it's the monastery, like that does not happen all the time. So Emmy and I were both like a little rattled and like shaken up, and I don't know that we waited too long before we went to check in with the Tenzo, who at that time was Shugen Roshi, in the adjoining office. And we went in and we're like trying to sort of like report what happened. And Shugen took a breath and he was like, oh, he shouldn't do that. The refrigerator is a sentient being. That's not what I expected. That's not what I expected. And I took it in. And I think we probably talked some more. I don't remember anything else of that conversation about what to do and da 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 da. And anyway, you know, the initial like activation felt calmed, discharged, and like Emmy and I went back into the kitchen to finish making supper. And later I was thinking about this and I had to know, what does this mean? And I went back to Shugen and I asked, what did you mean by that? That the refrigerator's a sentient being. And he said, you know that rock that you and Emmy like to go and sit on in the river? We used to go during our breaks down to the river. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, how would you feel if one day you went there and it was covered with graffiti and someone had left trash all over it? Okay? You with me? That was the answer. A living world. A living world. And sometimes it does feel like our dominant American culture is behaving like it's a dead world. So that's painful. If you care, that is painful. A a little sincerity, a lot of sincerity. Practice seems to, I think, nurture sincerity. There's a story of how a student asked Yasutani Roshi, you know, Roshi, you speak about how important sincerity is for practice. How much sincerity does a person need? You know, is it like 75%? Is that enough sincerity? Or is it like 85%? 90%? Like, how much sincerity is enough? And Yasutani Roshi said, I think 1%. 1% sincerity is enough. At the end of Orioki, we chant, may we exist in muddy water with purity like a lotus. So how do we do that? Samadhi. If sila is an energy of sincerity or caring, samadhi is the energy of steady presence, attention, steady. And this quality of steady attention mixes so potently with sincerity. Things can really happen. I think a lot about the simplicity of the Zen instruction and like the simplicity of the form and the emphasis of the form. Like, that's a big part of how we train. And people will, you know, encounter that. And I think from the beginner's sort of standpoint, it can seem austere. It can seem heavy-handed. It can seem like, wow, there's like a really big emphasis on discipline. Like, what about the other important qualities, right? And it can take a while before we start to see like what is being offered in all that form. Do it this way, not like this. It's like you have to stick around. You have to stick around. And so I think it is really good that I feel like over the years, we, meaning the training staff, has been like learning how to be skillful, more skillful, I hope, in terms of like offering the form and holding the discipline. But I guess what I want to say is like, those instructions, like, trust them. That's where the sincerity can really help and commingle. I was thinking, again, this is like another memory from long ago, wandering down memory lane. I remember I was like, it was, you know, probably session during my first year of residence. And my mind was super scattered. And I think that, like, People should appreciate, first of all, just like how hard the cooks work and like how cooking for sesshin is its own unique practice, because you don't really get to sort of like finish caretaking, wrap it up, and like forget about it until tomorrow, right? There's like meal after meal and the cooks are doing things in between. And I remember being in that position and really finding it hard to settle my mind. And again, talking to Shugen, and he said, it was Orioki. I guess maybe Orioki was really bringing up my fixations because I'd been like part of preparing the meal or something, but I was really like going to town in Orioki. I couldn't focus. And he was like, well, one thing that could help is to just really pay attention to where your hands are. And at the time, I thought, like, that is such a weird instruction. Like, what does that even mean, you know? And, like, he was like, because, you know, you're always doing things with your hands in Orioki. And from the vantage point in which I was, I just thought, like, I don't really get it. Like, what does that have to do with, you know, seeing my true nature? But sincerity, I tried to take it up. And I could see, okay, there's a calming effect. I needed to know where to rest my attention, right? Samadhi, that continuity of presence, has to have a clarity about what we're being present to. That's part of its skillfulness. So when you have a practice, you know, sometimes the monitors will say, like, remember what your practice is. And we might be sitting there and being like, oh yeah, right, whoops. We have to, our mind needs to know, like, okay, my practice is the breath, or my practice is shikantaza, or my practice is mu. And then that's what we're returning to. And that helps that really active mind, that distracted mind, calm. And so when we're given the forms of sesshin, where everything is really stripped down, and we're given this instruction to, like, be present with what is, that is potent instruction. To the degree that you're able to engage it, I hope that you have discovered just how potent it is. Master Hongren, who's the fifth ancestor of Zen, Chinese ancestor, says there is an indestructible Buddha nature in the bodies of living beings, like the orb of the sun, its body luminous, round and full, vast and boundless. The pure mind of all living beings is like this, merely covered up by the dark clouds of obsession with objects, arbitrary thoughts, psychological afflictions, and views and opinions. If you can just keep the mind still so that errant thought does not arise, the reality of nirvana will naturally appear. This is how we know the inherent mind is originally pure. And I would say, you know, having worked a lot over the years with instructions on keeping the mind still and not letting a thought arise, that I have found it to be more beneficial and more skillful to understand that you're just practicing a very, very discerning awareness that gets more and more refined. And thoughts may cease to arise, but it doesn't really matter as long as you're recognizing what the mind is doing and recognizing that brightly, right? So there's a difference between getting carried away by a thought and having it lead and sort of spin and create a whole world, and recognizing a thought as it arises and seeing that just within that recognition itself, there's the possibility, and in a sense, really, if we're practicing, the inevitability that then that thought will dissolve. And we can see and feel the mind doesn't necessarily want it to dissolve. The mind will pursue sometimes. So this is where that steady presence, that quality, that energetic quality of samadhi is so important. You can also think in terms of, like, there's the sense of, like, okay, well, I'm going to take my attention and put it on the breath and, like, keep it there. And there's also, like, I'm going to take my attention and put it on the breath and keep it there, but really my practice is going to be each time that I wander off, seeing that and coming back. It's a slightly different emphasis, but I found it helpful. It's, you know, so that the practice is then like, oh, right, not that, this, this. You can see if it's helpful for you. Also, I think helpful to notice that the continuity of attention, that kind of presence, is sensitive, right? If we're going to be able to see the flickering of thought movement, we need to be sensitive, which means we need to be a certain kind of relaxed, a certain kind of receptive. This luminous mind that's aware and awake, it doesn't have to be treated like a sealed container, keep everything out. It doesn't have to be like that, as long as you're awake. And that quality of sincerity, again, that can bring forward a nice underlying energy as we're cultivating samadhi, that we care, and that we care deeply enough when the thoughts come and they start going, and we love our thoughts. We love our thoughts, right? It's so interesting. It's not actually, but we think it's so interesting. That's the nature of our sort of karmic mind. It seems so engaging. And so it's helpful, I think, to have that deeper caring to remind us this is not the time for that. So prajna, wisdom, the energy of prajna, allowing space. This runs so counter to how our mind typically engages with things, very dense and kind of claustrophobic. And if we're looking at our mind, we see, so much activity and so much grasping and so many projections and so many shadows. And I think I came across this teaching by Andy Carr in a book called Contemplating Reality. And it's a good book. And he has this section where he's talking about how our mind basically, how projection sort of works. I don't want to get too into it. It's a little dense. Let me see if I can just pull out the juicy bits for the moment. I mean, basically he says so he's defining some terms to make a larger point. But he talks about so if you think now about the tall buildings in New York City, an image of those tall buildings will appear in your mind. But this is a generalized, the term he's defining as generally characterized phenomena. So for our purposes, just to note that we can call those tall buildings in the city to mind. You know, we do this all the time, right? You can call your mother to mind, or your childhood pet, and something will come to mind, amazing, totally magical, and it's just your thought projection, right? It's not actually those tall buildings, it's not actually your mother, it's not actually your childhood pet. It's your sort of thought, feeling, image, memory, gestaltish thing. And he calls it this would be the generally characterized phenomena, which is a referent for the specifically characterized phenomena. But we get confused all the time, and we think that gestaltish, feeling, image, mental formation of a person, a place, or a thing is the thing. It's totally not the thing. And then we spend our lives in this like world of all of these generally characterized phenomena, thinking that they're actual, and we are. Andy Carr says, here is the basic point. We spend a great deal of time thinking about things, but that thinking is mistaken. So, what happens when it's not the generally characterized phenomena? What happens when we actually encounter a thing as it is? Master Matsu. The mind can be spoken of in terms of its two aspects, birth and death, ordinary, sort of conventional, I should say, and suchness. Mind as suchness is like a clear mirror which can reflect images. The mirror symbolizes the mind. The images symbolize the dharmas. If the mind grasps at dharmas, then it gets involved in external causes and conditions, which is the meaning of birth and death. If the mind does not grasp at dharmas, that is suchness. Okay? Bringing forth that quality of steady presence and allowing some space, not grasping, then the sacred living world, you can fully bloom. The Dharma of thusness has been intimately conveyed by Buddhas and ancestors. This is the wisdom teaching. I've noticed lately that if I am speaking to myself, I can call myself beloved. And it helps. Beloved, it's okay. I'm sure you're going to pull your talk together just fine. You could try that too. Beloved, hang in there. Master Hongzhi says, contact phenomena with total sincerity. Not a single atom of dust outside yourself. I like that one. It feels like it hits all the notes. Contact phenomena. That's your samadhi. Presence, steady, contact. With total sincerity. That's your sila. Not a single atom of dust outside yourself. That's your prajna. And on the way to prajna, we have so many glimmers. Wonder. Curiosity. Tenderness, ease. We need all of this so much. It will serve us so well. It will serve the world. We need this connection to the deep truth. The sacred life. I've been feeling buoyed, grateful, inspired by some words that Van Jones offered, the political analyst and green jobs advisor in the Obama administration. He said, then there's this particular kind of theology that is native to the Black church, what I call hallelujah anyhow theology. Shit's going wrong, things are crazy, it's bad. That blue sky. Oh, those robins. I talked to a friend recently, said, how are you dealing with all of this? She said, I am defiant. They can't have my mind. Hallelujah, anyhow. I'll end with a poem by Joy Harjo, Praise the Rain. Praise the rain, the seagull dive, the curl of plant, the raven talk. Praise the hurt, the house slack, the stand of trees, the dignity. Praise the dark, the moon cradle, the sky fall, the bear asleep. Praise the mist, the warrior name, the earth eclipse, the fired leap. Praise the backwards, upward sky, the baby cry, the spirit food. Praise canoe, the fish rush, the hole for frog, the upside down. Praise the day, the cloud cup, the mind flat, forget it all. Praise crazy, praise sad. Praise the path on which we're led. Praise the roads on earth and water. Praise the eater and the eaten. Praise beginnings. Praise the end. Praise the song. Praise the singer. Praise the rain. It brings more rain. Praise the rain. It brings more rain. And Rumi, we are the mirror as well as the face in it. We are tasting the taste this minute. We are pain and what cures pain, both. We are the sweet, cold water and the jug that pours. Let's use this ripe, rich time in Sesshin. May it be for the benefit of all beings through space and time.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.